Mississippi, she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on fast, just the same. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. And we're here this morning with my friend, attorney Terrence Gross, who is the owner, founder, and attorney with Gross & Schuster here in Pensacola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here. Warming up for us. Not too cold.
Not bad.
It wasn't all that bluster. It really wasn't that bad at all.
But, nope.
Anyway, we have a few minutes here, and of course, most people know I'm a personal injury lawyer, and I've been doing this for 46 years. And last month, I celebrated my 46th anniversary, which has caused a lot of reflection, and I've seen
a lot of changes. 46 years. I can't even imagine how much law has changed since you started.
It has, and that's what we're going to talk about today, the changes. So these so-called changes, there's a word or terms for it. It's called tort reform, is most of these changes. So a tort, besides being a French pastry, also is pretty much means a civil suit.
Right.
Yeah, civil wrong. It could be a personal injury, like a physical injury, like a car wreck, or it could be, you know, libel and slander would be a tort. And, you know, anything like that. Sexual discrimination suit would be a tort, you know, where you're for a civil wrong, you're trying to collect money for a civil wrong is a tort. And when they say reform, it's pretty much the insurance companies, folks, that are trying to beat the drums to get the legislature to change the laws in favor of the insurance companies, which on its face sounds, okay, what's the problem? Well, if it's in their favor, whose disfavor is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the little person. It's right. The accident victim. And then all of a sudden they come into me and I say, well, you've kind of been in this accident, but now we also have a problem because of what has transpired over the past decades. Because I do feel in this day and age, as we go into 2026, I really feel that when I bring a civil tort action, that I almost have one arm behind my back. Because it's just not an even playing field the way it used to be when I started out. And I'm going to give you many, many examples. So I started out in 1979. The first change I recall was 1981. So 2 years later. So before then, before 1981, let's say that you caused a car wreck. You're the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
You're the target. And you've got State Farm. You got plenty of insurance. You were smart. You got full coverage.
Right.
So you know that whatever the settlement is, you're not going to have to pay anything. Your company will. And if you need a lawyer, that's part of the policy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay for a lawyer. If you have State Farm, they pick their lawyer and they defend you and all that. So in the old days, I could put your name in the lawsuit because you caused it.
Right.
And State Farm because they're defending it. And that's the way it was done until 1981. And then they passed the non-joinder statute, which on its face seemed to be pretty benign.
Mm-hmm.
And it simply said, you can no longer mention the insurance company. It just has to be her. Now, why did they do it? Even though it's subtle thing. Well, it's pretty simple. So then we get to trial. So I'm the plaintiff's lawyers and here the jury's hearing all this stuff. And they don't hear anything about insurance. So you could be a nicest defendant and very polite and dressed well. And the jury says, I like that person. And there's no mention of insurance. They say, surely, Mr. Gross, being the good lawyer he is, he would mention insurance if there was some. He hasn't mentioned it, so there must not be. And to prove my point, I'll give you.
Are you allowed to at that point?
If you mention insurance, not only would the judge be forced to toss the case out.
Right.
That judge would sanction that lawyer. I mean, first of all, tongue lash him because here you are, you picked a jury, you're taking up everybody's time. And if I were to blurt out, say I get in closing arguments and her lawyer, State Farm, whoever it is, hired by State Farm, if I just blurted out in the heat of the moment, the judge would call a timeout. The jury's dismissed.
Oh, no.
And he said, Mr. Gross, that is a violation of my court rules. I'm going to fine you. You're in contempt. And
wow.
Now you got to come back at 6 months from now and start all over again. So it's called the non-joinder statute. But listen to me. Here's my point I want to make. how do I know it's had a negative effect? Well, I can think of three cases since then. I've had three different cases where, you know, when the jury goes back to deliberate,
mm-hmm.
they are allowed to ask questions. And it's not uncommon for the bailiff to knock, "Hey, judge, the jury gave me this piece of paper that's folded, and they have a question for you, mm-hmm. Your Honor." And all of a sudden he opens up this piece of paper and it says, "Does the defendant have insurance?" So mm-hmm. they're already back there thinking about this.
Sure.
They're supposed to make base the verdict on the law of the evidence, but sometimes there's sympathy for the defendant because they don't want to bankrupt this very nice defendant. They didn't mean to. I actually had one case, and I got it reversed, by the way. The case was I had a young Air Force fella. They ended up with a severe neck injury and a car wreck on our rear end. A little old lady with lots of insurance and rear end, but grandma. So grandma's there at the defense counsel's table. And she comes, she's got the walker, she's in her 80s, she's got the little perm, the little gray-blue hair.
Very sympathetic.
Look, everybody's perfect grandma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they call her to the stand, it takes her forever. You know, they're watching her painfully, you know, 80-something years old, get her walker, out of the walker, the bailiff's helping her, she gets in the seat. And I was smart enough to just ask her like one or two easy questions to sit down. I wasn't going to beat up on grandma. I'm no dummy. But this guy had surgery, so it was a pretty significant case. And the jury comes back with a $14,000 verdict. But throughout the whole trial, the defense lawyer kept on calling her the widow lady. And I kept on objecting, "Your Honor, he's trying to even further get sympathy."
Yes.
So now not only can I not mention insurance, her own lawyer's calling the widow lady, you know, and,
just
so the message was clear, this this lawyer here is suing the widow lady.
Gosh.
So I actually got that case reversed because of his repeated references her to being a widow lady, which obviously was
pretty manipulative.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I wasn't allowed to mention, "Hey, you know, grandma's got tons of insurance," whatever. So here they see this lawyer suing poor grandma is going to take grandma's house and grandma's Social Security or whatever. And it did result in a very bad decision. And so we had our most recent case. So we're in Santa Rosa County. This is just 6 months ago. And we're trying to pick a jury. And it was actually a company. Usually companies, I don't worry because, you know, most people think, you know, any company is going to have insurance. But again, it was a surgery case. And of course, plaintiff's lawyers always have to ask this question. You always have to ask, is there a cap, ma'am, that you would put on maybe awarding? Is there some limitation in your mind that no matter what we show you, no matter what the evidence is, there's just a cap where you'd say, I could never give more than this. And somebody brought up, well, we wouldn't want to give more than the insurance that this company has. So somebody said that.
Oh, gosh.
And which is the first that I've ever heard anybody articulate that. I mean, come out and just admit it that, you know, I don't want to, we'd hate to go excess. And there was a lot of discussions about that. But again, because the judge can't, you know, all the judge could say, don't worry about insurance. The judge has to give a very generic thing. Mm-hmm. It is not up to you to worry about insurance. Base your verdict on the law. And it's kind of real generic, so no real answer. And the jury's starting to wonder, well,
yeah, what's that all about? Yeah.
So and again, there's never mention of insurance. So it certainly was a very sly law for the insurance industry to push through the legislature. Joe Q. Public in 1981 didn't know about it.
Mm-mm.
And they don't know how many people are listening to me now. It's been on the books now since 81. And they're saying, what?
Yeah, I've never heard of that. So,
But the whole thing, the whole impetus was to limit or tamp down jury verdicts. And has it worked? Of course, because now we know for a fact that people are thinking about that. And you got a very nice defendant. And we tried another case about 3 or 4 years ago. And our businessman, a local businessman, had ran into our client who ended up in surgery. And so the businessman came to court suit and tie, looked really good and really presentable. Nice gray hair.
Professional.
Very professional, just a nice fella. Unfortunately for us, and we don't pick our clients, but our client looked like a meth
head.
And we tried to dress him up for court, but I think really what had happened to him was he got addicted to opioids because of his pain.
Right.
And so he actually is one of these guys, I think when he retained me, he wasn't ever heavy. He was probably like 170 when I first became his lawyer.
Yeah.
The time he got the trial, he was like 135.
Oh, yeah.
That's
not a good look.
And the eyes were sunken in.
Oh, no.
So he just looked like a drug user.
Yeah.
So here you got this guy that looks like a druggie against this nice, well-dressed, appropriate defendant. And again, there's no mention of insurance. And all of a sudden, you would think the sympathy should be for the poor plaintiff that got hit. But all of a sudden, the tables can shift. So that's just one rule of law, as subtle as it was. So then we fast forward to 1986. 1986, there was a couple laws that were passed. The number one law was what we loosely call as the loser's pay rule. Lawyers have a different name for it, proposal for settlement, offer of judgment, but basically just says whoever loses at trial, and there's a definition for loss. I'll get the technical how you define who loses. But if you lose at trial, that the loser has to pay the other side's attorney's fees and costs. So
and I've heard of that.
So, yeah. So for the first time ever, because back before 86, if I went to court and lost my time, I got nothing. And on a contingency contract, that means even if I spent $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in the case, I just eat it.
Mm.
So the client would owe nothing. They probably still owe the doctor's bills or whatever, but they would owe nothing because they had no skin in the game. I got a lawyer on a contingency fee, so they don't have to pay the lawyer by the hour. And if you lose, lawyer doesn't get a fee. You don't owe them anything. So that's the way it always was until 1986. But now, let me give you real parameters. I'll tell you a case I went to trial on. So here's a case I went to trial on in Milton. So they had offered me $40,000, which we turned down. They offered $40,000, which means they have to get, to call it a win in court, the verdict would have to come in 25% less than the 40. So if they could convince the jury that the case was worth less than 30, then it's a defense win.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a defense win, then my client would be responsible to pay the defense lawyer all their costs, which could be $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, depending on the case. So they could come out owing money. They can be rear-ended.
Gee.
And the jury award a little bit of money, but not enough money, and go away with a net judgment against them under this law. Meanwhile, in that same case, I filed a piece of paper saying we'll take 100. So they filed their piece of paper for 40.
Wow.
And set us up for a verdict of less than 30,000. I filed one for 100, which set them up for a verdict of over 125. Well, the jury said 250. So not only did we win the 250, which was good, which was better than 100 because we would have taken 100. We got 250, but then the judge, because we won, gave me another 117,000, 100 for fees and 17,000 for cost on top of the verdict. So we walked away with, doing the math, 367, which was a big win for us. So the loser's pay rule is a two-edged sword. So it was designed, though, to work for insurance companies against plaintiffs because their whole insurance companies think all these plaintiffs' lawyers are dreaming and going for the lottery and overreaching and asking too much. They never thought for one second that, wait a second, maybe the insurance company could be unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the lawyer files a reasonable offer, a bird in the hand. So I knew the 100 was lowish when I filed it, but we would have done it. That was early on before I spent the $17,000 and before we had to go to court and all the rigors of going to court, and you're never guaranteed the outcome of going to court. So they gambled and lost. So it can cut both ways. So that loser's pay rule, actually, I'm one of the few lawyers that probably doesn't dislike it because I think I am reasonable. I can't always get a jury degree with my way of thinking, maybe, but more often than not, it could be to my advantage as opposed to disadvantage. So anyway, so that's the loser's pay rule. That same year, on medical malpractice cases, they passed a cap on damages. So again, at first blush, if you don't think about it, if you just stop and think, okay, and what was the cap? It was $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So at first blush, you may think, well, what's wrong with that? $500,000 is so much money, and these plaintiff's lawyers are just, you know, whatever, and all the billboards and advertising. So that seems fair enough. Well, first of all, who are you really penalized? Before I told you that the tort reform could penalize the plaintiff, but when you have a $500,000 cap on a case, you know who you're really penalizing? Can you guess?
Yeah.
Who?
That would be the victim.
Yeah, but there's an adjective I'm really looking for. It's the severely injured people.
Oh.
Because if you stub your toe,
right,
there's no jury giving you $500.
Right.
If you break your pinky, nobody's giving you $500,000 and stuff. So this is for the people. What if because of the, I'll give you two stories. So after this law was passed, mm-hmm. here are two cases that are not urban legend, real cases. So there was a fella after this passed. It's just a case I know about. It wasn't
right,
my case.
Right.
But there was a fella in Gainesville. He's at Shands in Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
He had a cancerous leg or gangrene or something like that.
Right.
And so the doctor says the only way to save you is we have to amputate your leg. And the guy agrees to the amputation.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it was his left leg.
Okay.
So he goes under surgery to know that he's going to remove his left leg, and he's got to deal with that. He wakes up from surgery.
Oh,
oops,
no.
They cut off the wrong
leg. No.
They cut off the good leg.
No.
Now they still got to cut off the bad leg eventually.
Oh, my
gosh. So now
he's
a double amputee, which is a lot different. And you're going to say, here's $500,000. Have a nice day. They can't get left from right.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's a major mistake. They got plenty of insurance, by the way. So it's Shands Hospital, for Christ's sake. So, but that was just totally unfair. So you're penalizing this poor soul that's the victim of obvious medical negligence.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's that case.
And that was the outcome? They couldn't do anything more?
There's a cap on damages.
Gosh.
Now, I'll give you what happened eventually. But before we do that, I want to tell you another story. So now there's this young couple, and I want to say this is Shands too. I want to say, I'm not picking on them. It's a big hospital mm-hmm. in Gainesville. So there's this couple, and they're delivering their healthy child. And, you know, if you've been around childbirth, the blood and whatever, it's a slippery situation.
No, don't tell
yes,
me this.
Yes, unfortunately, the doctor dropped the baby
no.
on its head.
No.
The baby slipped out of the doctor's hands, drops the baby on the head, permanent brain damage, the baby lived. But now you got a healthy baby with all the dreams you have with a baby. They're all ruined, and now you're going to have a wheelchair-bound, mentally, physically disabled child for life. $500,000, have a nice day.
Oh, my goodness.
$500,000. So these cases and others like them were appealed to the Supreme Court, but these take years. About a decade later, around 1996 or so, the Florida Supreme Court kicked out that law as unconstitutional,
mm-hmm.
thankfully so, limiting the access to courts. And that is no longer the law, thank goodness, because the Supreme Court had to intervene.
Well, thank goodness.
And they did so rightfully. But that's what happens with some of these caps. The other downside, and I know we're running out of time, so what is this, you know, prid quo, what is this give and return? So the insurance company gains by all these laws, right?
Right.
What's supposed to happen in return? So a medical malpractice, what was the promise to the doctors? We get these caps in, doctors. We can lower your medical malpractice insurance.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Your premiums, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Never got passed on because I would talk to my friends or doctors. I have plenty of friends or doctors. And I always ask them, have your rates gone down? And they look at me, are you from Mars? No.
No.
They haven't gone. Well, wait a second. If they got the caps on damages and they don't have to pay as much and you're still paying where's all this money going into the coffers and of the insurance companies? Same thing is true with workers' comp. I don't do workers' comp, but over the past decades, it's been this and this. Workers' comp people get jerked around like you won't believe. They get nothing for pain and suffering, no matter how negligent their employer was. They get their medical bills taken care of. Okay, well, that's fine. They get two-thirds of their lost wages, but they're robbed of maybe their life, their some people want to work, actually.
Right.
Think earning money and providing for your family and being productive, and now you're in pain and all these things. And I've asked my contractor friends out there, have your workers' comp rates gone down with all these laws? And they look at me, hell no. What are you talking about? It's one of the biggest line items on my budget. If I didn't have to pay workers' comp, I'd really be making a good living.
Wow.
And so then where's it going? Ah, the insurance company. So it's that's what goes on. It's a shell game. So it's the poor citizens. They try to paint it. It's the evil lawyers. It's these ambulance chasers that are the cause of all the ills of society. I have so much more to talk about, but I'm watching this clock. I always watch that clock.
You've got about a minute or so left.
I can see it. So this has been brought to you. It's a PSA, been brought to you by me, Terrence Gross. Been here for 46 years. My three law partners are all my sons. We have five offices throughout the Panhandle, Pensacola, Milton, Crestview, Mary Esther, and Navarre. We're very available by telephone, 850-434-3333. Best way to really reach us is grossandschuster.com, our website. If you look at our reviews, we're 5 stars. I think they're real people, our clients, that you can see what they've had to say and compare us to some of these big advertising firms. Look at their reviews versus our reviews. It becomes a no-brainer. So this is Terrence Gross. I'll be signing off. I'll be back, I think, next week.
Good. Okay. It was great to see you. Always informative. I always learn so much from you. And again, if you want to reach out to Gross & Schuster, their number, 850-434-3333.